You're listening to Guide to Brides, the wedding podcast. I'm Nikita from Team GFB, and if you're planning your wedding or helping someone who is, you're in the right place, because I'll be discussing trends, practical planning tips, and more with the help of some special guests along the way. So let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome back to another episode of Guide to Brides, the wedding podcast. We've got the lovely team from That Event Company here today. We've got James and we've got Tom, and they'll be talking all about lighting for your wedding, as well as any AV, audio visual things that you might need to consider. So would you guys like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, and my name's James. I'm the director of That Event Company. We've been running for 6 years. We're a local audio visual lighting and sound supplier for Oxford and around a 30 mile radius of that. We do roughly 20 to 40 events a week, and that includes corporate and weddings. I personally have been involved with probably, maybe 10 to 15,000 weddings, I think, over the years.
That's a lot of weddings.
Yeah, well, I've been in the industry for 20 years, so there's definitely a lot of weddings that do happen.
So you've seen it all? And you've probably seen all the things that can go wrong and all the things that can go well.
I've made a lot of mistakes as well, which is why I'm pretty good now.
Good.
I'm Tom. I haven't been in the industry quite as long as James. Seven and a half years.
So a good chunk then.
It's a good chunk. I've been with That Event Company effectively since its birth. Me and James have obviously worked together for a long time. Worked as James, just in a less amount of time. I've worked on a lot of weddings. I've worked with a lot of brides and grooms and sort of taught them through the processes of what we do and how we can assist. It all kind of comes in the nature of my primary role is to kind of look after inquiries, as is James, but we spend a lot of time out on the road as well, having to be hands-on with setting bits and bobs up. But yeah, my primary role is to kind of look after inquiries coming through and to kind of assist brides and grooms into the decision-making process.
Amazing. So what would you say your most popular sort of package or your most popular request is for weddings now?
That's a tough one,
yeah,
right?
It depends, because in terms of kind of, the preferences of people, they always come and say, we want to make it look nice, but it all comes down to, necessity. And we find audio is always quite a big necessity for people. So band audio, speech audio, it kind of isn't people's, exciting thing that they need, mm-hmm. but it's something that they kind of find that they always do need.
Yes.
So they always come and say, we'd like it to look this and this, but always at the end it's, we also need support with the band audio or the speech for, the best man speech and stuff like that. So in terms of the fun things, you've got fairy lights and ambient lighting, mm-hmm. Sort of fun, colourful lighting. But then, as I said, it always comes back down to again at the end, doesn't it? Kind of the less interesting, we need a microphone.
it's quite seasonal as well, so we'll find that during the winter months we'll do a lot more lighting.
Yeah.
And that's the same with our corporates as well. And obviously in the summer, there tends to be more emphasis on having maybe outdoor stages. So we do like weddings that are wedding festivals, and we do private festivals as well, which are quite good fun. So we do find that it is seasonal, so you'll have certain things that are asked for more in certain periods of the year. So for example, in the summer, one of our popular items that we kind of do, everything that we do is like Lego anyway, so we kind of build it bespoke for everyone, but one of the more popular things in the summer is like outdoor overhead canopies.
Okay.
So we obviously go to any venue and they've got an outside space, and then we literally make a circus tent light with lights.
Amazing. I've actually seen that. It's got really popular on like Instagram and TikTok at the moment, hasn't it? Yeah.
We'll tell ourselves that.
We've definitely done it. But maybe second.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, the first one that I remember doing, which was quite a few years ago now,
at least 25 to 30.
No. But it was probably about 5 years ago, four and a half, 5 years ago, and we did it in a village hall style building. So it was, obviously it's quite bare, it's quite minimalistic, and it was
blank canvas.
Exactly. So we went in and created a single point fairy light canopy overhead with structures in each corner and then down the sides, and kind of created this false ceiling.
I remember that.
And then we hung the clients bunting for them, and it's still one of the images that I send to people to describe them, the kind of the visualization, because it does show how you can transform just that space alone you know, with something, just one thing. We did uplighting everything as well, but this, that wasn't shown in the image. The image was primary, you know, it's to show that, you know, we were using these big silver structures. Then as soon as you run fairy lights down them, wrap them with fairy lights, bunting in the air, it can kind of really...
Looks amazing, yeah.
Because it is one thing, actually, that we do get asked a few times, and we have to explain to the client, actually, do you know what, this is going to get expensive. Because they'll say, yeah, I've got this venue, and it looks great, and they're like, we want fairy lights overhead. And we look at the venue, and we're like, it's just not possible. So we have to put structures in. And they are quite pricey. Mm. I mean, individually, they're not. But as you start adding, like, 12 to 15 of them around the room, it can add up in price. And so you end up with venues that look like barns but don't have any beams or anywhere to connect to in the room that's like load bearing, you know, so we can't connect to things like curtain rails, because, you know, curtain rails are designed to have the forces going down, they're not designed to be pulled.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have seen clients attaching stuff themselves which they put across the room, and we just won't do that. We have to make sure that it's load bearing, because we obviously want to leave the room in the same state that we found it,
but also health and safety.
Exactly, you know, it's you can't cut corners. It's got to look good, but it's also got to be safe. It's as simple as that, because the last thing you want is you know,
a big structure falling on someone,
anyone, obviously, but on your day, your special day, you don't want a fairy light strand just dropping down lower than the other, because it's not being secured properly.
This does remind me of a story. I can't remember whether you were on the job. It was a village hall.
Right.
We said to the client, So we told the client that it's just not possible to do fairy lights now without structures. And they were like, look, okay, we don't have the budget for the structures, but what we'll do for you is we will do some eye bolts going through the wall. So they had permission from the village hall to put up eye bolts, go all the way through the brickwork.
And my god!
Yeah, so this,
how did they manage that?
Well, they didn't, and this is where the story is going. So what they did was they put the eye bolts in, but what we told them to do was they had to go all the way through the brickwork and secure them on the other side of the brick. So it obviously had something to attach to. What they did was they drilled a hole. They put in a warbler, and then they screwed it into that. Now, we just didn't check. We should have, but, you know, we told them what we wanted. We looked at the wall. It looked like what it should have been. We then ran steel under tension. So we used steel cable under tension, all absolutely fine. We then done a compacted zigzag canopy. Yeah. So this is where fairy lights kind of go, you know, like
in and out from
like
the middle.
Yeah, so not a crisscross, but like one strand goes like that. And they're quite compact. It's about 30 centimetres apart. So there's a lot of tension pulling in between these two bits of steel. And it was all absolutely fine. So we were just about to leave, and the client was putting out this vintage crockery for which they'd hired in. And it was just like,
that.
And just luckily it was just one side, because obviously, you know, they're not all going to break. It's only going to be a little bit. But yeah, literally it just pulled the raw plug out of the wall.
Oh god.
But once again, if they just put a bolt on the other side, I think it's called a coach bolt. If they put a coach bolt on the other side and gone all the way through, it would have been absolutely fine. But it's one of those moments where it's like, yeah, now we're going to have to just wait. We're going to help them drill a hole.
Yeah.
We're going to have to put the coach bolt in.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. We stayed on site and we
just
got to work.
The crockery was fine. Everything was fine. But it adds to the tension of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything,
yeah.
One teacup
it's
was
all
kind
about
of
the drama.
Yeah, yeah. Everything was absolutely fine. And in fact, yeah, it was just it kind of made us realise, you know what, from now on, we just do it all ourselves.
That was probably
stress of the couple as well, because they were like, no, we'll do it. It's one more thing for them to have to worry about.
Yeah, but then if you cut corners on these things, one, stuff can go wrong, and two, yes, you might save some money, but is that going to have the same result? Mm. It's probably not.
No, I mean, it's the same of everything. You know, I think back to my wedding, and once again, this is with a photographer, and I saved money on the photographer, because I was like, do you know what? His work's all right. Looked at lots of other photographers and they were great. And then, yeah, just in the end, I was just underwhelmed by what I got from it. And, you know, it's because I scrimped and saved. Now, I mean, like, you know, we're not in this industry to kind of make money, are we? You know, we're just trying to help people. And so when we're telling people, you know, go with this lighting, it's not because we want to generate more revenue. You know, we'll do that by having, you know, the amount of events that we do a year. But what we're trying to do is make people get the best out of the space that they're working in, whether that be with fairy lights or, you know, nightclub lighting or band lighting or festival lighting or any of the above. You know, we're just trying to help people have a memorable experience where they actually think, do you know what, just by spending that extra £500 or £1,000, it just took the event from being a 7 to a 9. You know, that's kind of what we're trying to push people towards, and we're just trying to help them really with that.
Amazing. So in terms of pricing, when we come to lighting, because we're talking about, like, you know, certain things can be a bit more expensive than other things, you know, up lighting, I personally would have no clue where to start. So what kind of budget would we be looking at for that kind of sort of, from the basic level to you know, full scale? I mean, it obviously depends on a venue and the size and everything like that. It's quite a difficult question for you, really, but where would you say is a good starting point?
I mean, we've worked on wedding events where so talking about a total budget of the wedding, you know, not just what we do, but we've worked on weddings where they've spent less than £3,000 for everything, and that's feeding the everyone, you know, the fish and chips, you know, that's what they've got. Yeah. They've got people to come in with fish and chips. And we've also worked on weddings where the production, or not the production, but the whole wedding's been several million. So, yeah, it varies hugely.
Really varies.
But in terms of, like, the charges that we have given, I suppose there's not really an average. Well, there has to be an average. Yeah. I wouldn't know what it is.
I'd say the average price, dependent on, I'd say venue based rather than DIY. Obviously we obviously do a lot of DIY where we would categorise that as, you know, hiring the venue, and then they obviously find all their suppliers, or, you know. But if we go to a venue based sort of do a venue based wedding, I'd say it's probably anywhere in the region of £500 to £1,500.
Okay.
£500 to £1,500. DIY is probably more £300 to £800, something like that. But then also on the spin of that, we can go, lighting can effectively be anything.
It's a black hole for budget.
So we also, you know, if you've got the budget there and you've got the right venue and the right sort of outlook of what you want to try and achieve, and it can be £5,000.
It can keep rising. Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, I'd say a healthy budget from our perspective isn't actually based on how much money they've got. It's all the categories of how much time we've got to get it, where the venue's based,
whether it's worthwhile for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well.
If someone comes to us and says, you know, we want just some ambient uplighting, but it's an hour and a half from us, you know, it makes more logical sense for us to recommend or for them to find someone local to them that can do the same thing without having to travel the hour and a half, without having to charge the inflated rate of travel. And just say, look, just we recommend speaking to these guys. They'll be able to sort you out with 12 uplighters, because that makes more sense. And then you've got an extra £100 to spend on a couple of bottles of wine or something like that.
Yeah,
because it makes more sense.
It goes with our sustainability profile anyway. You know, we don't want to. So we work up to 30 miles away from Tame, which is where we're based, but we push it out to 45 when it's clients that we've worked with pre going carbon neutral. So event managers and that sort of thing. And we've had a few clients where they brought it back into our radius, or recommended their clients come into our radius just so they can work with us still.
Yeah, amazing. And I mean, you were talking about, like, changing the whole look of village halls. I mean, that's working with, like, really budget weddings, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you can really transform something if you want to save a bit of money on the venue and, like, really go all in on making that basic blank canvas venue look amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then you might find that you're actually spending a similar amount to, you know, a venue hire of a barn.
I think probably we're more of a larger percentage of someone's budget when they're doing a village hall wedding.
Yeah
like the blank canvas DIY kind of thing.
I think so, yeah. Because, you know, if we're going into a venue that's already, you know, fantastic, and we're literally just
enhancing the features.
You've got to exaggerate the features and personalising the space.
You stole
one
of my phrases for later.
Is that what it was? Is that your keyword?
Enhance the features.
I was going to say that, highlighting the features.
But I do think that, if we're going in there and we're exaggerating or enhancing the features, to take your word, you know, then their budget on that is less. They'll probably be spending £85 to £110 per meal for their guests. Whereas I think when it's a village hall wedding, it's more of a DIY, they're probably looking at around the £25 to £50 per head. It's been a long time since I've been around. I don't know what caterers charge anymore. But, you know, so our kind of the proposals that we then send out to clients that are having events in village halls, they're probably looking at what we're charging and being like, oh, wow, you know.
That's a lot.
But
but it will enhance it so much that it, you know, completely transforms the space. Whereas putting a few uplighters in an amazing country house already isn't too much on the budget side of things.
No, not really. And I mean, you know, I'd prefer people not to push themselves financially as well.
We have been quite lucky in the respect that, you know, I think people who, for example, village halls or sort of empty barns and stuff like that, they do come to us with the knowledge that, and we understand that actually it's not always down to their affordability, just that's people's outlook, that's what they want to achieve. They want to have something, they want to have it blank, and they want to be able to design it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been to the same venues time after time, and a couple of things obviously will be the same, the designs of the canopies, they might be the same, but every single, you know, element is got a slightly different outlook. Not because they're thinking, oh, you know, the couple are thinking, I want to make this, you know, as cheap as possible, but in fact, they, you know, they just wanted to hire a blank space to make it theirs, and, mm-hmm. and in terms of like personalising their own space. So we are quite lucky that when people come to us and say, you know, we want to achieve X, Y, and Z, we tell them how that's achievable, and they just say yes or no. You know, they'll say yes and no to that, or yes, but can we look at how we can tweak that to make it work and make it fit within our budget? But it's not because they haven't got the budget, they're just trying to achieve, you know, creating their perfect day in a different sort of sense.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to going to a venue where everything is obviously quite regimented in terms of recommended supplies, you know, you have to use X and Y.
Factory.
Timings are, you know, are kind of set, whereas obviously that's the other thing is in village halls and blank barns, we've got all the time in the world to achieve what we need to do.
We do quite like
so it's amazing from us, because then we can say, look, because you're giving us this flexibility, we can then give you this flexibility because we don't have to come in and get it done in an hour and a half like we do in certain venues.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's fine. We can find an alternative route to go to make it, you know, work for you.
Mm.
Because you're giving us a whole day to set something up that normally, you know, we'd only have an hour and a half to do.
Or even day before as well.
Day before wedding. I mean, we, the best.
We have got so well known locally about, especially in the public venues where it's open to the public, closes at 5, and then, you know, the wedding guests are coming in between 5:30 and 6:15. We've just got really well known for being able to deliver. So and that doesn't matter the size of the event as well. Literally, it's like, you know,
you know what you're doing.
We can be plugging stuff in at 30 seconds before the clients come in, because that's the nature of those buildings. But we've just got really well known for delivering sometimes really elaborate events in not very much time at all.
As a couple, how would you know whether your venue needs lighting or AV? What kind of questions should you be asking your venue? Or is this something that you turn up and you go, oh, actually, it's missing something?
I think it's definitely a difficult one, because your venue can look beautiful without lighting, but you would never know the difference until you saw it lit.
Right.
Same as your guests, right?
Yeah.
Your guests, like I said earlier, we do a lot of work in public spaces. So, you know, museums and everything like that. So you can find that your guests might go there the day before and walk around the museum and see it all. And then they then go there for dinner. And it does look different for dinner, because the venue will set it out differently and there will obviously be tables and all of that. But if we don't put lighting in, are any of your guests going to know? No, they're not. But if we do put lighting in, it is going to take it to the next level. Mm. You know, it will. I've always said that the things that make an event look and feel a certain way is a combination of everything. But when it comes to dramatising it, it is all about lighting and props. So props being flowers as well. Mm. Not just like floating giraffes or things like that, which we have seen at venues before.
I've seen that too.
it exists. You know, so a combination of props and lighting can take a space from being, you know, just a space to have dinner to being like the next level. And it just depends on the client, really. Some clients are really happy with how the room looks. As such, they might just need a little uplift.
Yeah.
Or they might not need anything at all.
Yeah. I mean, I look at the work you guys did for us at our awards, and how, you know, Oxford Town Hall, stunning setting anyway, that main hall that they've got there with the ornate ceilings and everything. But as soon as we put the lighting in, it was like another world. And everyone was taking photos of the ceiling with the pink lights and sort of the, I can't remember, what is it called, where it had like the glittery effect?
We call it sparkle.
Sparkle.
Yeah. So yeah, effectively that's what we do, is we we don't want to walk away from a venue thinking, oh, that was all right. We want to walk away from a venue going, oh, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we do this. Mm-hmm. We like I said earlier, we're not in this to generate revenue. We're in there to walk away from a venue being like, oh, do you know what? That was awesome. We really enjoyed doing that. It was stressful. It was this. We had these challenges. But, you know, look at it.
Yeah.
We done an event a few days ago, which was a dinner for 30 people. I think I was mentioning it earlier. But we spoke to the venue about it yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. And they said it's like, it was so weird to see loads of 50 to 65 year old, like very high top end businessmen walking in and just going, ooh, wow, like that. Yeah. And taking photos of the space, you know, it's not what you expect. No. But yeah, I mean, how do you know your venue needs lighting? You don't.
You don't.
If you've got no lights and it's going to be at night, you do. But, you know, with that, you could just be candles. You know, we're not pushy. No. We never have been.
I guess it's the good way of kind of thinking of it is if you like look at a cake, is, you know, lighting doesn't change how amazing the venue is. But adding icing and you know, bits and bobs onto your cake, it just adds a bit of an extra kind of wow and kind of a feel to the cake that otherwise it wouldn't have. But it doesn't change how tasty that cake is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are happy with just a, you know, a rustic Victoria sponge cake. But some people want, you know, the full works, you know, to decorate it. But it doesn't change, as I said, it doesn't change what's inside. It's just changing, you know, the overall feel of that cake and given that kind of enhancing the features.
Enhancing the features.
I feel like you've written that cake.
No, statement. I
haven't. It's an analogy that he uses.
I quite like that.
Really.
But no, it really
your
is.
Event's like a cake.
But yeah, it doesn't change the taste of the cake. Just like us going in and lighting the venue doesn't change what the venue is and what, you know, what it looks like. It just enables us to, you know, give the venue a bit of a wow, a bit of a pop.
Okay, amazing. And in terms of the logistics, I know you touched on it a little bit earlier. But how far in advance should we be thinking about this? So if someone is listening today or watching on YouTube or whatever, and they think, oh, you know what, actually we might investigate lighting our venue or adding this sort of enhanced touch to it, how far in advance should we be thinking?
Oh, definitely 5 years, because then we would certainly be able to plan our diaries a lot better. So we do between 20 and 40 events a week, like I said, and some of those events will be booked 2 years in advance. Some of those events will give us 48 hours notice.
Right.
So from a logistics perspective, we're dealing with last minute changes.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we don't mind doing it, unfortunately those last minute clients do also negatively impact the clients that have been booked for a long time. Mm-hmm. Although the clients have been booked for a long time, you know, and everything's planned and everything's been scheduled. So, you know, the team have got the time that they need to prep, that's in their diary. So it's all literally listed out for them per event. So they know exactly what they need to do for each event. So if there's any kind of lights that need to be programmed in advance, you know, they already have it in their diary. So the clients that book last minute don't negatively impact clients that have booked for a long time, but it does mean that we then have to find time for
They get a lesser experience, I would say.
I didn't really explain it very well, but yeah, effectively, if you're booking last minute, we still want to give you that same experience and same attention that we give to people that have booked from a long period before. But obviously, there's only so much time in the day.
Yeah.
And it, being in the events industry, you know, we're not a 9-to-5 industry, because, you know, if we look at corporate events that we do, and the corporate event starts at 9 a.m. and finishes at 5, well, somebody's got to be there at 6 to build it.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's got to be there at 8 p.m. to
take it down.
So, you know, our industry is a 12 to 16 hour day.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way that it is. And that for us is Monday to Monday. You know, we work 7 days a week, 364 days a year.
Yeah.
We take Christmas Day off. But, you know, like, yeah, I would say that when it comes to booking in advance, it's entirely up to the client. Mm-hmm. If they have a last minute emergency and they're like, do you know what, we really need to make this happen, we'll still support them and we will find the time to support them. It's just when we phone all the technicians, we're like, tomorrow, can you kind of come in an hour earlier? Because, you know, we've got X, Y, and Z, we're just trying to help them out. And, you know, they'll do it and they'll support it because they understand the cause and they want to make sure people have a good experience. But obviously, yeah, the more time we've got, the
better.
We can do the job.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I guess the best way of also looking at it is the amount of questions that you need to ask about the logistics, about the kind of simplicity of setup or, you know, difficulty of setup, what time we have access, what time we have to be out by, whether we have access the day before. All those questions, we still have to ask them. But if we have 6 months to come to the agreements and to work out the answers to them versus 2 days, everyone's going to have a better time if we have 6 months, because they have time to communicate with the venues. We then have time to communicate with the venues. We can chat with them, make sure that everyone's happy with what we've decided. Whereas on 2 days, it's like, you know, this is what can be done. This is what can't be done. Sorry, we've got to go with this. And it just kind of makes it a bit more frantic for them.
Mm.
Whereas obviously, if we've got that extra bit of time, the amount of questions that need to be answered is the same. It just means we have time to be able to deal with it in a more kind of, it's more enjoyable for everyone.
Yeah, and I mean, with my wedding, for example, I don't know every single thing about my venue. Mm. So if I suddenly think, oh, you know what, I want a wall of fairy lights, might not be possible,
no. You
know? So having that time to be able to ask those questions is useful. And, you know, wedding coordinators don't work every single day of the week. A lot of them are off on Mondays and Tuesdays because they're working weddings Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and that's it. I think that's the, you know, kind of, in terms of the question in setting itself, is it's important to touch base with us and you know, ask us questions and stuff. But there's no pressure to book. You know, that can, you know, we can, obviously, you know, availability is a big factor in terms of stock availability. But, you know, if they just want to contact us and just have a chat with us, then we can advise, send them over some prices. That doesn't mean that there and then they have to go yes or no. They can then think about it and say, do you know what, having been back to the venue for a second or a third time, we decided we don't need this, but we would actually need a bit more of this. Is that possible? But then having that initial kind of proposal and having had that initial discussion or seeing some initial photos, it all helps. As I said, if you had to do that in 2 days, it means decisions are a bit more rushed and it just feels a bit more frantic for everyone. But if you have that time to be able to just work through the process, it's just enjoyable for everyone.
We've actually got one which is very much like that, and it's not a wedding. This is a ball for 800, and we've been speaking to the client, and I'm sorry if you're watching. We've been speaking to the client for 7 months, and they haven't booked anything, and the job requires about 10 to 12 technicians to set it up.
Wow.
And we haven't had confirmation until yesterday that they want to go ahead. And, you know, this is a week away.
Yeah.
So now you can imagine from our perspective, and once again, we don't mind because we know that it's possible, but it means that we're now rearranging everyone's diaries so we can pull in different skill sets to make this event work. The equipment-wise, we've got lots of kit. There is absolutely no issue with the kit. We can deliver the event with the kit. It's primarily the people, because, you know, we want to send people that we trust to events.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we can't send people that we don't trust to an event, we need to be there ourselves to make sure that it happens as it should do. And this is the issue that we've got with, you know, like this client that we've got in a week's time, is we want to support them fully. But how can you support a client fully if they're not giving you as much leeway as possible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, we'll do it. Mm. We'll make it work, won't we?
Yeah.
Always do. We
always
have to
deliver.
Yeah, we have to. We've got no choice.
Brilliant. And, you know, you've talked about your venues having a turnaround time of like 30, 40 minutes, like being so quick. How do you guys manage that?
Sheer luck.
No, yeah, there is forward thinking, and luckily in those situations, obviously we know the space as well. We know the quirks. We know we know where the cobble off. If we're rolling a fire case, we know to move left at that cobble so everything doesn't fall over. Just, we know we've kind of got it drilled to a point. And once again, we're honest. So if we've only got half an hour, we know what's achievable in that half an hour.
And I do the bake off thing.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, 5 minutes!
5 minutes left. And once again, it's all about communication. So as long as we've spoken to the venue, we've spoken to the couple, we've made sure that their expectations are realistic, then I think that's how we kind of deal with it best, is forward thinking. It's kind of sheer just going, let's just go. You know, it's only a half an hour sweat. Let's get it done.
And we have told clients as well before, like, what you're trying to achieve is not possible in half an hour. We'll do what we can, but it's, you know, we're still going to be working it as you come in. And as long as they understand and they appreciate that, because some venues and some designs of how the equipment's laid out, when you go above a certain amount of people working on it, everyone just gets in each other's way. So you end up becoming less efficient, and it takes longer by having more people on site. It's like a bizarre kind of, you kind of hit a peak and then there's no point adding more people because it slows things up. So yeah, we have told clients before that it's not possible.
I think as in any nature, it's just, if you communicate, make sure that everyone in, because you know, if it's half an hour for us, it's also half an hour for everyone else, tables, chairs, catering, tech cakes. So everyone is working to the same, you know, same kind of stress and same, even the couple, they know in the head that it's only 30 minutes everyone's got. So they're thinking, oh, you know, is it going to be done by the time we need to be done? So as long as everyone just kind of, I know it sounds really cliche, but works together as a team. And, you know, there have been times where, you know, we've had a lot to do. So 25 minute comes and, you know, someone has helped us bring a box of uplighters to somewhere, you know.
Yeah, same,
it's not part of the team. Same as we'll help someone.
Tables and chairs, we've brought tables and chairs in before just to get it going.
Again, you know, everyone knows the situation. So you kind of all just work together. But, you know, it comes down to forward thinking. So as long as we know, it kind of comes back to that. The last question is, as long as we know in advance, we don't get there and go, yeah, sorry guys, you've actually only got half an hour now. Then we can think about it. We can throw the right staff at it. We can, you know, preset lights to make sure that they're set to the right
colour. There's a lot of pre-production that we, depending on the event. So some events, you know, we will go to site without the lights being set because we'll have X amount of time set up. Sometimes we'll have a whole show programmed, all of the lights labelled, they've all got a position written on them, so we know exactly what corner of the venue they need to go in as they go through the door. And, you know, all of the cables already ran into the structures, taped in the structures or zip tied or however they're working. They've already been synced, and literally, so it's a matter of just them plonking it down, hammering it in, putting a light on top, and that's already ready and going.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds quick. I mean, that's still like a 15-minute, 20-minute job.
Yeah, he just explains it like boom, boom, boom.
But that 20-minute job, if we didn't pre-plan it at the warehouse, would be a 50-minute job.
Yeah.
Doing all those bits on site would take, you know, an extra half an hour. So it's all just about working out where we need to save time and then plotting that into the team's diary so they know that they've got specific tasks of what they need to do on the prep. So they'll know that they need to prep jobs, but sometimes we're quite specific with the requirements where it doesn't just say the client's name and the job and they then print out the list and go through it. We'll actually set them separate tasks, which is literally like, you need to get X amount of these lights and you need to set them to channels 1 and 500 and you need to set them in this mode and then you need to sync it to this desk or something like that. So, you know, we'll be quite descriptive with the team. And I think every event's different. Like, it is the ones where it's the public spaces where, you know, you have a short lead time in which to set up. They are the ones where we do a lot more kind of pre-production. But generally, everyone before an event has their equipment tested, and then it obviously goes in the van, and then it gets set up.
I mean, we are lucky. It's a rarity that we only have 30 minutes.
Yeah,
it's a rarity. But it has happened. It has happened.
And you know, it will happen again.
Oh, 100%. But once again, it all makes, when you walk away at the end, you go, that was quite cool.
Yeah,
we did that in 30 minutes.
That was,
and actually,
you know,
and couples understand as well, because they'll go, you did it.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Because, we've already been realistic and said, look, this will be our main focus. This is what we guarantee we can achieve. This is what we'll hope to achieve with any spare time that we have. And when they come in, we've achieved that. You know, it always just feels like.
I do remember when I was a youngster and first started in this industry, before this company, and I was running a different company, and I remember oversleeping and my ex-business partner also oversleeping. And we had a conference. It wasn't a wedding. It was I don't know whether it was a conference. It was business-related. Yeah. So it was projectors and audio and stuff like that. We weren't supplying the projector, but we were doing all the sound and microphones. And it was a client that we'd worked for maybe 10 to 12 other events. And we both overslept. I remember just knocking on his door, waking him up, and then like loading the van up with the equipment, going to site and turning up and talking to the client. I was like, really, really sorry, you know, both overslept. And the client just turned around and goes, no, it's absolutely fine. As long as you can set it up in 6 minutes. And it was literally just like, okay. And I think, you know, I've had good training over many, many years about, you know, getting things delivered in certain time limits. I think, you know, once again, I probably had it done in 6 minutes and 1 second. But yeah, so time is always of the essence. And obviously that's, once again, going back to the whole Village Hall things, that's why they're so nice.
Yeah.
And marquees.
Yeah, marquees.
So I've got 3 days to build this production. Lovely.
Definitely. Yeah. And you've mentioned there about sound as well. We haven't really talked about sound. So in what aspects of a wedding would sound come into consideration? I mean, we've got the speeches and you've got like the band music, but where would you assist a couple? Because I know a lot of bands, for example, might bring their own equipment for that kind of thing, but where do you come in?
It depends on the band, actually. So you'll find that the more expensive the band, the less equipment they bring.
Right.
So as soon as they
That's
become
a question to ask your band then.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah. That's what when an inquiry comes to this, first thing I say is, you know, do you have your band, are they supplying audio? If they are, then all fine. If they're not, find out what they need, send it to us, and then we can let you know how we can support best for you.
Cool.
Because once again, that is actually a frequent thing that audio for band doesn't get told to us or realised until later along down the line, when they have that final discussion with the band and the band are gone, right, so we'll turn up and, you know, get ready with, and they're like, no, the audio is not going to be there ready. I thought the audio would have been provided for us. So then they come to us and say, the band need audio. The band need mics, the band need a mixer, and with certain audio systems, therefore we've got to provide a sound technician. But effectively, obviously in the first discussion with the venue, just find out if they've got a system in place, because some of the venues that we work in, they've already got a system which all the bands that come to site will use. They've got separate speech systems as well that they'll put in the alcoves in the ceiling or on the beams above. So just find out if the venue's got any audio, band, speech, anything like that. Second of all, find out if they don't, find out if the band can provide anything to support you. Because once again, if the band can do it inclusive of their package and they don't need to spend money with us, you can spend it on something else, whether that be more lighting or champagne or
more food
or something like that. And once again,
inviting that auntie that you don't like, pay for her dinner.
Exactly. Yeah.
So in terms of sound for events, do you guys, how big of a production does it need to be for you to be able to support the sound?
Anything. Speeches. So as you kind of previously said, you know, even if it's just a speech system for 50 people, you know, we can provide just a basic, really basic, easy to use, you know, speech system, and also, you know, just an easy to use basic plug-in and play system. So if you don't want to have a DJ or you don't want to have a band, because quite often, you know, we do find people just want to have their playlist and just they want to pick their music. They want to, you know, have the kind of the fun and the novelty of, you know, creating their playlist, you know, in the coming months before the wedding. Then we can do that. So literally, you know, they just need to turn up with their phone, plug their phone in, and then, you know, rock and roll. Obviously, a little bit now complicated now that they've got all those converters for their phones. But once again, you know, we do have them, and people tend to bring them themselves. But then also, you know, we can support, you know, 12-piece bands. So, you know, if you've got a 12-piece band coming in, they need a stage, they need full production, mics, audio, you know, a sound technician to look after it, then we can do that as well. So effectively, anything from really, really basic to more complex with you know, a bigger audience.
Yeah, and once again, audiences, like Tom said, you know, we done an audio system the other day for 20 people, and the only reason why we done an audio system for 20 people was because they were on a really long table and it was a really reverberant room. So when you've got one person at this end talking, by the time they're heard by the person at this end, it is a bit messy and a bit muffled. So just by distributing the audio down the room, it meant that everyone could hear that person really, really clearly.
And then they didn't have to shout or project
and they didn't have
too
to
much.
Shout.
And,
no, yeah, because once again, if they're shouting, it only makes it worse for the person at the end. They still can't hear
it's
it.
It's like shouting, attacking.
It's just physics, right? Yeah. But yeah, like and like Tom said, you know, we can go anything up to, you know, thousands of people. So it just depends on the client, right? And once again, we're here just to recommend. And not every client goes with us, and we understand that. But even if the client's, you know, got their event 60 miles away, and we know that we can't do their job because of our, you know, how we feel about being carbon neutral, we'll still talk to them. We'll still give recommendations, and we'll say, do you know what, this is a reasonable price, or do you know what, yeah, you know, your band asking for just the green M&Ms is probably a bit much. You should probably tell them they should have all the colours. You know, so it's just, it's all about that, isn't it? When it comes to the tech writer, you know, bans us for some crazy things like 25 bottles of vodka, that sort of thing.
Yeah, weird.
So, you know, we can advise the clients that some things are a bit unreasonable and that they should, you know, shut the band down. But yeah, when it comes to audio, we'll support clients locally and we'll support them further away, but obviously just not with kit.
Amazing. And you've just talked briefly there about your sustainability policy. Do you want to go into that a bit more and what that means to your business?
Yeah, so in terms of the sustainability policy and what we do, I think it goes back to probably 5-6 years ago when my kids watched something with David Attenborough and they asked me what was going to happen. And normally I'd have a answer for it, right? Mm. And I've got an answer for everything. But with that, I was like, actually, do you know what? I don't know. Although I turned around and said, oh, don't worry about it. You know, everything will be fine. You know, I said that to them. But, you know, I did think, you know, well, actually, I don't know. So I thought, well, you know, what can I do as a person? And what can I do with the business to make it a bit more sustainable? So when we went through all the calculations and we worked out where we were burning carbon, and at this point, we were working nationwide. So we're up and down the country, you know, up to Scotland, down to Cornwall, all over the place. And we looked at it and we're like, do you know what? It's just all diesel.
Mm.
It's literally all diesel. And, you know, it's a bit like going back to the Middle Ages and just thinking, you know, it's about the local community. So the more we can look after the local community, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than us traveling 60 miles to go and do an event, you know, past Birmingham, and then this company that's up in Birmingham that does AV traveling 60 miles down and doing an event in Oxford. What's the point?
Yeah.
You know, what's the point when there's that job's in Birmingham and this job's in Oxford? Doesn't it just make sense for, you know? So I think when it comes to the localization of certain types of businesses, it makes perfect sense because you don't, you know, we don't need to go into London to work. You know, the only reason why a lot of people in our industry go into London to work because they're like, going into London.
Okay.
I've got an event in London.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
Right, and that's kind of how they want to come across sometimes. Not everyone. Not everyone. But you know, it is all about how they want to be perceived. You know, that job in London might be doing just might be one radio might be being dropped off to Canary Wharf, you know, but they'll still be like, going into London. And it's just that's the kind of feel that people have got when they're out in the country, you know, and they're saying they're going into London. So yeah, we just decided to literally just carve out London.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing that. And then just carve a radius of 30 miles. And then even our kettle in the office, it's a one cup kettle. So it automatically pours it. So it's not a kettle that you then pour yourself. It automatically pours it for you. But it'll only boil one cup at a time. So it means that we're not wasting any energy boiling too much. We try and not use any batteries that aren't rechargeable. We try and minimise the amount that we throw away. We try and minimise waste. We try and reuse carpets, especially for corporates, for weddings. It's a bit harder. Because
I think people might not know that that's a big waste factor, isn't it, carpets?
For marquee companies, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, you think that how many metres squared is a marquee?
Yes. And you can't reuse it.
It's going to landfill. It's going to landfill. So I mean, yeah, the best way to be sustainable with a marquee is to go with cocoa mat. And, you know, don't get me wrong, it doesn't look as nice.
Mm.
It doesn't. But yeah, all that carpet's going in the bin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot of carpet.
So in terms of like your sustainability policy, are you working towards carbon neutral or are you working at carbon neutral now?
So the first time that we went through the process, we offset, not for the year, but we offset to the start of the business.
Okay.
So we offset back 3 and a bit years, I think it was, because we felt like it was important to not just be like, oh, we're carbon neutral now, but to be like, actually, with carbon neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So we offset all the way to the beginning. And when we do our calculations now, because we're not accredited anymore, because I disagree with spending 400 quid to be accredited and then, you know, and then paying for it. I'd rather just pay that extra £400 and put it towards even more carbon reducing factors. So when we do the calculations now, we just over offset every single time. So I'd say that we are carbon positive.
Is it carbon negative?
Depends on which way you look at it.
We'll have to work it out. Which is the right phrase?
We try to offset more carbon than what we actually use. Because at the end of the day, like, we're one of only a few companies that I think are doing it. And so we might as well just, yeah, push a little bit harder. Same as what we do for Christmas presents for our clients. You know, a lot of other people will send out hampers or things like that. Last year, we bought solar panels for villages in Africa.
Right.
And, you know, and lighting and stuff like that. So that's kind of what we've done. The year before, we bought children's gifts for kids in the UK. So we tried to do one abroad and then one in the UK. So we kind of take it in turns. I think the year before it was kids, gifts for children who had no family at Christmas. So, you know, we try and be a bit more like that, you know, but we tell the clients this is what we're doing. But rather than giving them a bottle of wine, so, you know, everyone's gluttonous at Christmas, rather than allowing the client to be gluttonous at Christmas, let's just, you know,
help someone else.
Yeah, because the clients are not going to appreciate it. Well, they are. They'll appreciate a bottle of wine, but I think I prefer to always give to people that need it more.
Yeah, amazing. It sounds like such great policies that you've got in place. So that's a really, really interesting point. So before we wrap up, can I ask you to give me some of your top tips for couples who are considering lighting, AV or sound, or all of them for their wedding? What are your top three tips?
Oh, that's hard. Top three tips.
You're top 10, don't you?
No.
Yeah, it was top 10.
No. Top three, I'd say that the first one is actually almost just to literally just write down everything and anything you can think of. So if you walk into a space and you think, right, this needs a bit of that, this needs a bit of that, just to write them down. Take lots of pictures so you can always refer back to them. So when you're thinking again, when you're sat at home, you know, in front of the TV, you can go, oh, actually, I thought about that. So, and you can take a picture, because the pictures online are all well and good, but if you see something specific, take a picture of it so you can visualise. And then, as I said, yeah, so pictures, notes, write down everything and think about everything that you'd want. Second of all, consider your budget. I think, you know, it's although, you know, we've been saying throughout, it's not about making loads and loads and loads of money on events, and it's about being realistic with what people can achieve in time. But if we have a budget, then we can design them the package that they, you know, need and want, but not go with them, you know, overcharging and not scaring them to kind of thinking, is that how much I need to spend? Because if someone comes up to us and says, you know, we need X, Y, and Z, but we've got, you know, 500 quid, we'll treat them the exact same way as someone who comes to us and says we've got, you know, £3,500 budget. But if we know that, then that package can be, you know, built and bespoke for them.
It saves them time and us time. If it's just the one or two quotes rather than doing 40 quotes.
And I think, a third top tip is just embrace it. Just embrace the fact that really, you know, lighting is a luxury, but it is your kind of one, hopefully your one special day. So embrace it and just you know, go with it, because it will make the venue look even more of, you know, of a wow factor than it already is.
It enhances all the features.
It is the prolific features. So I added another word in now. But it does. But, like, you know, lighting just enhances the mood, it enhances the venue, it enhances just everything. It does. You know, we often say to people, you know, control of lighting as well is another factor that's really, really good to think about. Having that control of lighting, whether that be simply transitioning colours of uplighters to having your kind of moving dynamic lights controlled by a lighting tech. You know, it depends on the extremity you want to go to, but let's go with even just the basic, a little desk that allows you to change the colours of the uplighters that are around the perimeter of the room. Dinner time, nice warm amber, warm white, something like that. But when it comes to kind of party time, hot pinks. You have that ability to transition, therefore, you know, your guests know it's not sit down time anymore, guys. It's time, let's get up and let's have a bit of fun, let's have a boogie, because you've provided that transition in from sort of evening, daytime, to sort of like the wedding breakfast, to now, you know, first dance is done, everyone get up, let's have a boogie, let's have a drink, let's have a good time. So that's it, is kind of, lighting does help to kind of connote the vibes and the feelings that are going on at the time. So when you know it's time to party, you're more likely to do that when suddenly the lights are pink.
Yeah.
And they're vibrant and they're, you know, exciting. So I guess that's kind of another kind of tip as well in itself is
a bonus tip.
A bonus tip is, you know,
subtle transitions and instant ones.
Yeah. Allow the lighting to do some work. Yeah. Because, you know, once it's there, it's not just, you don't just have to leave it and it's like, oh, the lighting's done. You know, you can move through the motions of changing that light, and you know, one light can have multitude of purposes. Mm. So you can have one uplighter. That one uplighter can be, you know, there for the ceremony, it can be on the floral arch. And then, you know, for dinner, it can be, you know, around the side, just to kind of give that kind of candlelight amber feel. And then dancing, like later at night, you know, you can have that color pink, you can have another one, you know, orange, and another one red. You know, you can have so many different kind of effects, but all from one package. So it doesn't have to be, you know, we want one light to do one thing, another light, you know, they're all kind of multi-purposed, aren't they? So, embrace the usage that you can have from lighting, because you don't have to spend loads of money, you just got to start somewhere.
No, and with lighting, so we kind of break, just to kind of help Tom, or add to Tom's last point, we kind of break it into like three or four different sections. And the first one's always uplighting, right? Because it's cost effective. And, you know, in terms of turning a venue around and making it look interesting, you know, uplighting bang for buck is key, you know. The next thing that we recommend to clients after that is wash lighting. So that takes an uplighter or a similar light to an uplighter, but just spreads the light. So an uplighter is quite directional, whereas if you use a wash light, it spreads it. So you end up with, you can wash a space, but then also uplight it. So you kind of get beams of light cutting each other. So that would be the second thing that we tend to recommend to a client. The third would be patterns. So things like dapple lighting. So if you ever walk through a forest and you look at the floor because the sun's shining through the trees and you see all that kind of pretty light on the floor, so that's dapple lighting. So we can do that on tables and ceilings and all of that. And then lastly is kind of things like structures. Mm. So, you know, fairy lights, festoon overhead. But obviously then there's also all the party lighting, which is a whole other subject, that and festival lighting anyway. So that would be the kind of sections that we'd split the lighting into. And as we talk to a client and we go through their budget, it would be up lighting, then wash lighting, then break up lighting, and then structures. Because that's bang for buck, the best way to go for the client.
That's a really, really good tip. And I think if people are thinking about easy ways to introduce lighting, it's like that list. We'll write it down and put it in the show notes. But that list is a good sort of checkpoint as you go through, unless you absolutely want that initial thing we talked about, which was the canopy of fairy lights.
If you want fairy lights and you have to have fairy lights, you know, then, you know, go with the fairy lights. If that's your dream, you know.
I think, you know, as well, for us, when the inquiry comes through and we see the venue, you know, that list does slightly deviate, you know, for some venues. Definitely. We know that, do you know what, 99% of the time, they're actually only going to go for a fairy light canopy. Then we'll say, look, fairy light canopy for your wedding, this is how much it's gonna cost. We have previously done, you know, uplighting packages, we've done audio for bands and audio for DJs, we've done outside canopies. Would you be interested? Because once again, it's not about ramming things towards people, it's about making sure that they know
what's possible.
So then, you know, and we send over some images of what we've done previously at that venue. You know, if we've only worked at that one venue one time, we aren't the best at taking photos, so we don't always have access to photos venue specific. But, you know, if we have images of other venues that we can send over, and then it's kind of given them that choice. Do you know what they'll, and quite often we'll get back, can we book that fairy light canopy, and can we consider and think about it and let you know in the future about whether or not we want any of those additions. But it's about giving the information at first, so that they have access to that information. They know that, you know, we can support them with that. Once again, it might be something that they hadn't thought about. But then vice versa, people contact us and me and James turn around and say, we've actually never done that before. That's a pretty good idea. Let's give that a go.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone's learning. So although it's, you know, although it's the couple's, you know, wedding day and they're learning through the process and they rely a lot on us and they rely a lot on suppliers, you know, we're also relying on other people's ideas to kind of give us new ideas to think about that we can then carry over to new venues.
It's coming over that like teamwork aspect again.
Exactly. Yeah. Once again, I think there is a team on every wedding, and that includes us. It includes the bride and groom, it includes the caterer, it includes the venue, it includes the florist.
Yeah.
You know, if one of them isn't quite right, then it can upset the bride and groom. You know, if one of those elements isn't quite right. So that's why it is all about everyone pulling together, no matter what they're doing on site, to just make sure everything is as perfect as possible. I mean, once again, nothing's 100% perfect, right? But just trying to aim for that perfection on site. I think that probably the best top tip that we would say to every single bride and groom though, is just to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a stressful process, right?
It's totally a stressful process. I'm in this industry and I did not expect it to be so stressful.
I'm constantly stressed because of the amount of events that we do. But yeah, I mean, once again, when you understand that, you know, like we strive for perfection, everybody does, you know, there's going to be things that you're not quite happy with. That's just what happens in every day of your life. Just accept that, and then everything becomes so much easier when you're planning your wedding, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's your day, enjoy it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And on that note, I think that's a really lovely point to finish on. Enjoy it, whatever you're doing. Yeah. So great. Thank you both so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about that event company, we will link them in the show notes for you. Thank you guys. Really appreciate you coming in, and happy wedding planning. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Guides for Brides, the wedding podcast. Head over to guidesforbrides.co.uk to continue your wedding planning. And don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe on our social media channels @guidesforbrides.